Don't believe the propaganda. And that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. I'm Peter Schiff, the host of the show for the next hour, president of Euro Pacific Capital and author of Crash Proof: How to Profit from the Coming, or Now the Ongoing, Economic Collapse. We do the show live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We do it on our website, www.europac.net, and also on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz. That's 5.07 megahertz. And the number to call, toll-free, 888-678-9597. If you have any questions or comments, it's 888-678-9597. Well, a couple of announcements. What's going on? We got the Vegas Money Show coming up next week. I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week in Las Vegas at the Mandalay Bay. And, you know, we're doing our client-only meeting again. We just sent out the email for it. I think we've got about 150 people already signed up. And that's about three times the number of people that did it the last time. So, obviously, the popularity is growing when we're getting – we're trying to switch rooms to get a larger room because the initial room that they assigned us for that client-only meeting – you don't have to necessarily be a client. You can be in our database. It's just an event at the Money Show that is not advertised to the general attendees of the Money Show. So only people that have been that know about it from our email and this radio show will know where to go because it will not be an official part of the Money Show. But I think we might have as many as 200 people signing up for it. Who knows? You know, based on the number of people that have already signed up. And I will be giving my regular Money Show presentations. I'm doing one panel. I think it's called the Smart Money Panel. Although if it's typical of the Money Show, it's probably the Dumb Money Panel. But I'll be on that. They're not doing the Bull Bear debates anymore. You know, if you want to see one of the Bull Bear debates, we have it posted on YouTube. If you, I mentioned it, if you do a search for my name and the Money Show under YouTube, there's one of the Bull Bear debates, that we did. I wish they had some of the earlier ones, maybe the first couple of them there, because the bulls were a lot more bullish, you know, than they were towards the last one. They were trying to basically coming over to my side without actually admitting it. Now Joe Battipaglia is now a full-fledged bear, although I've yet to see an email or a phone call from Joe to say, hey, Peter, you know, you were right. But I give him credit for, you know, ultimately becoming bearish. But I think it would be nice, you know, to get one of these guys, you know, to give me, you know, a little pat on the back to say, you know something, you took a lot of shit from us, and we were the ones that were wrong, and you know what, you were right. So I'll see if anybody ever says that to me. You know, at the Mark Skousen at the Freedom Fest in July, which we emailed everybody about, we got, I think, 110 people that signed up for the Freedom Fest from my email. And that's, you know, there's 900 people so far, so better than 10% of the current attendees are going to be there from me. And it's still not too late, I guess, to sign up. And I know Steve Forbes is going to be there, and I'm trying to see if I can get Skousen, Mark Skousen, to get a debate with me and Steve Forbes. I'd love to have some time with him. That'd be interesting, too. But I don't know if that's gonna happen. I'm not sure if he'd want to debate me, you know, especially considering how lousy his track record has been. You know, Steve Forbes was one of the biggest proponents that there was no housing bubble, that the talk of a housing bubble was nonsense at the peak of the housing market. And one of his other more famous calls is for the last 5 or 6 years, he's been calling for a collapse in oil prices back down to $30 or $35 a barrel. Where are oil prices today? $126 a barrel. Say it again, $126 per barrel for the price of oil. Oil has now tripled in price, tripled since my first radio broadcast of Wall Street Unspun. And you can go back to the very first episode I've ever done and how bullish we've been on oil the entire time. As long as we've been bullish on oil, that's how long Steve Forbes has been bearish. So he's got it wrong. So hopefully we can arrange something, because, you know, I still have a little bit of resentment for the Hatchet piece that his new, that his magazine did against me. Although I don't believe Steve Forbes had a hand in it at all. But nevertheless, it still happened on his magazine. Also, an announcement: they're changing the format on Fox Business. If you're watching me live on Fox Business, I've been doing it every Tuesday and Wednesday from 3 to 4. I'm not going to be doing that anymore. They're scrapping those panels. So I'm just going to be on Fox Business kind of randomly when they have topics that they want to interview me about. But for the next, I think, month and a half or so, I will be on every Thursday on Fox Business on the Bulls and Bears panel from 4 to 5 p.m. every Wednesday. So I'm going to do that for a while, although I'm not sure if I'm going to do it next Wednesday, because I'm going to be in Las Vegas, but we'll see. But, you know, following that, I should be doing it every Wednesday, 4 to 5 p.m. So that's going to change. I don't have any other TV, although I'm going to be on Fox Business tomorrow also on that Bulls and Bears. So I'm going to do tomorrow, Thursday, from 4 to 5, and then going forward, it will be every Wednesday from 4 to 5. Anyway, I'm still working on the new book, which potentially will be out as early as October, and the title is going to be "Is the Little Book of Bull Moves in Bear Markets: How to Keep Your Portfolio Up When the Market Is Down." The other book, Crash Proof, is still selling. I noticed that we're up to 193 reviews on Crash Proof, so we just need 7 more reviews. And we'll have 200 reviews. There's not that many books on Amazon that I notice that have 200 reviews. You know, actually, I'm looking at the reviews, and not the very last review, but there are 2 reviews before that that were, you know, negative reviews, 2-star reviews. And it's kind of interesting when you read these reviews, the negative reviews, because a lot of these people, it seems, I don't even know if they read the book. I mean, by some of the things they said, like one of these reviews talks about how I made a lot of bad recommendations. This one called Unrealized Potential. But he talks about how I wrote about all the benefits of preferred stock, and then he goes and criticizes me for recommending preferred stock. But, you know, there's nothing in the book. We mention what preferred stock is, but nowhere do we really recommend that people invest in preferred stock. So I don't even know where the guy comes up with that analogy. We recommend high dividend paying foreign stocks. He writes in his critique of Crash Proof, he writes about why common stocks are better to own than preferred shares, because there's better dividend growth and better potential. And, you know, I agree. And that's why we recommend common stocks. So sometimes I don't understand some of these reviews. You know, he also writes in there that I don't make a very good case about why people should buy foreign stocks as opposed to just buying ADRs. And he basically comes to the conclusion that the reason that I'm recommending foreign stocks is because that's what my firm recommends. You know, as if, you know, if my firm were recommending tech stocks, then if I was specializing in tech stocks, then the book would be about tech stocks. And, you know, there's 2 problems with that. I mean, number one, I think I did a pretty good job in the book about explaining why the types of stocks that I buy generally don't have ADRs, and the best protection from a weak dollar and the best way to get out of the market. I mean, the best companies to have maximum protection against a weakening U.S. economy, the stocks that have the best values and pay the best dividends, just don't list ADRs, and they're not likely to list ADRs. And so if you really want to get into those stocks, you have to buy the ordinary shares. But it's all very interesting that people think, well, gee, if I write a book and I recommend foreign stocks, and I happen to work for a brokerage firm that specializes in foreign stocks, that somehow it compromises my objectivity, that I'm simply recommending what I'm selling. And people just don't seem to realize that I don't just work for Euro Pacific Capital. I own the company. And the company specializes in foreign stocks because that's what I think people should be investing in. If I thought people should be investing in, you know, U.S. tech stocks, then that's what I would specialize in. And then I would go write a book about why people should buy tech stocks, because that's what I believe they should invest in. So everything that I do, you know, what my firm specializes in reflects what I believe people should do. And if I write a book and I give investment advice, it's going to reflect the same advice. You know, it's not like I'm David Luray and I was hired by the National Association of Home Builders to be their economist. You know, when the home builders hired an economist, they didn't hire an economist to give his opinions on the housing market. They hired an economist to give out positive opinions about why housing prices are going to go up. There was an agenda. So when somebody, you know, is hired by a company with a particular philosophy and they say, look, you're going to espouse this philosophy, then you can question their objectivity. But in my circumstances, I wasn't hired by Euro-Pacific Capital to recommend foreign stocks. I'm recommending foreign stocks because that's what people need to buy. And I can change. I mean, it's not that Euro-Pacific Capital can only sell foreign stocks. No, we can sell domestic stocks. We can buy people domestic stocks. In fact, years ago, buying people domestic stocks, it would have been a lot easier for me. You know, I would have had an easier time getting clients because that was an easier thing to do. It was a hard sell in many cases trying to educate people and get them to understand the real risks involved in the U.S. dollar and the U.S. economy. So it wasn't the easy way to go. But believe me, at some point in the future, I hope at some point in the future, we're not going to specialize in foreign stocks. We're going to specialize in helping people sell foreign stocks and buy undervalued U.S. stocks. I mean, that would probably be one of my favorite transitions to be able to make, to be able to repatriate, you know, years and years of foreign profits back into highly depressed U.S. stocks. And then, maybe I'll have a book out years and years into the future on how to pick up bargains in the United States. And then people can say, well, Peter Schiff is writing a book on buying bargain stocks in America because that's what his firm specializes in. Well, yes, because I'm going to change. And the books that I write in the future will reflect my philosophy in the future. And the stocks that my brokers and that I recommend are all going to change. It's not going to be static. It's not like we can only do one thing and, you know, we've got a round hole and we've got to make every square peg fit into it. Anyway, getting back, I want to talk a little bit again about the price of oil. You know, I get a kick out of this. I do these shows and, you know, we talk about the price of oil. Now, first of all, the fact that oil is $123 a barrel, and Goldman Sachs came out this week, and now they're predicting a super spike where oil can go to $200 a barrel. And I remember when they did a super spike before about oil going to $100 a barrel, and people were saying, oh, that's crazy, $100 a barrel. Now, when they said that, I was saying, first of all, it's not going to just spike to $100 a barrel. It's going to go up there and stay up there. You know, Goldman Sachs always wants to talk about it as if it's a spike, meaning that we don't really need to be that concerned about it because a spike kind of implies, you know, a speculative move, like it spikes up and then comes right back down. I think Goldman Sachs is probably right. Oil prices will get to $200 a barrel, but they're not going to spike up there. They're just going to go up there as a natural consequence of the inflationary monetary policies that the Fed and other foreign central banks are pursuing, based with the leadership of the Federal Reserve. But it's interesting because these high oil prices don't surprise me. They're exactly what I've been predicting. They're exactly what I've been forecasting. And the people who are surprised by these prices, although now they've risen so much, I mean, when I tell people $150, $200 a barrel, people now believe, well, I guess it's possible because they never thought $126 a barrel was possible, yet here we are. But people are looking for all kinds of explanations. And, of course, the price of food is rising and other prices, and people are looking for all sorts of explanations. And I said, look, we don't have to look for it. We know why it's happening. We can see what the central banks are doing. We can see the amount of money that is being created, and we know that what that does to prices. It's not a coincidence. It's not, you know, these events aren't happening in a vacuum. They're all interrelated. But people don't know. And it's the people who haven't understood economics that have been so wrong. You know, it's because I've understood economics, not because I'm so much smarter than these other analysts, and that's not why my forecasts are right and their forecasts are wrong. The problem is they're forecasting based on false assumptions and false premises based on a faulty understanding of economics. I mean, they're Keynesianists or monetarists, and they're not Austrians. And if you understand economics, if you understand inflation and central banks, and you understand how economies really work, then these forecasts that I've made are really no-brainers. I mean, it's very simple. And everything is kind of unfolding and happening the way I suggested it would. And it's doing it because my understanding of economics was the correct understanding. And the reason that some of the other people, my peers in other firms, have been so wrong is because their understandings are wrong. And it's obvious, you know, that the old saying, garbage in, garbage out. They're never going to get the right result. And the problem is they don't seem to learn from that. They can constantly think one thing is going to happen and watch a different thing happening and not basically challenge the underlying premises that led them to so many bad forecasts, whether it's about the economy or about the markets. Yet, you know, my way of thinking is constantly reinforced by the fact that everything is unfolding the way my knowledge of economics would say it would unfold. And so, you know, oil prices will keep rising. Other prices will rise. Food prices are going to rise. Apparel prices are going to keep rising. And what the government is doing now, you know, what they've done, you know, I think I talked about it briefly when I called in on the show yesterday. I know I got some good emails from John Catalfio, hosting the show. He did a good job, and also the appearance by John Brown. You know, that office is now up. Well, we sent out an announcement today. The Palm Beach office is up and running. We were already hiring some brokers for it. So that's down there if you're in the Florida area. And we just signed the lease. The lease was signed, I believe, this week in Beverly Hills for the Beverly Hills office. I think people are going to be moving into the Beverly Hills office middle of this month. But I'm pretty sure middle of the month, but certainly by June 1, the Beverly Hills office, Rodeo Drive, Beverly Hills, will be open for business. And we've already begun hiring people for the Beverly Hills office. So it'll give us two offices in Southern California, Newport Beach, and Beverly Hills, and of course we've got the Phoenix office, so that part of the country seems to be pretty well represented by Euro Pacific Capital, or will be even more so when these offices are staffed up. Anyway, let me I know I've got a few callers on hold, so let me take first call is from Carl in, I think it's Wisconsin. Go ahead, Carl.
Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, I always hear the term monetization of debt. I never have understood what it means. Also, I would like to ask you, they talk about, I heard an analyst today saying that the Federal Reserve drew a line in the sand with the Bear Stearns case such that we no longer need to fear financial crisis because the Fed will backstop.
Let me answer the two questions. First of all, monetizing debt is basically it's when the Fed creates money and buys up debt. They print money, so the debt is being monetized. The Fed is turning it into money by printing money, and that's exactly what it's doing. And it's creating inflation. That is the process by which the money supply is expanded. The Federal Reserve buys up debt and does it with money that it prints, creates out of thin air. The debt that it's been buying recently has been mortgage debt. And now more recently, debt backed by credit cards and auto loans and student loans. And this is unprecedented in the history of the Fed. It has never done this. And basically what's going on is the Fed is trying to take all these problem loans off of the books of the lenders and the investment banks and onto its own books. And this is, you know, we are on a path towards hyperinflation. And as far as the Fed drawing a line in the sand, they very well may have done that. It's possible that the Federal Reserve is now saying that no major companies in America will be allowed to fail. That no major financial institutions will be allowed to fail, no matter how much bad debt they have on their books. And this is a major disaster. I mean, if we're talking about the criticisms that we had about Japan, about their crony capitalism when their bubble burst and what the Japanese government did in the 1980s, I mean, this makes – I mean, the Japanese look like classic Adam Smith laissez-faire. I mean, if they had crony capitalism, I don't know what you would call what we have, but we're doing things – way beyond anything that was done by the Bank of Japan. I mean, this is the most irresponsible monetary policy, probably other than things that you see in Zimbabwe or Argentina or Weimar Republic Germany. I mean, we are doing exactly what these types of countries did, and that led to complete disaster. And we are on that path. But make no mistake about it. If we do not veer from the course that we are on right now, the dollar is going to be confetti. It's going to be monopoly money. And my hope is, and my belief is still that we will veer from this course, that ultimately we will do the right thing. Of course, it would be a lot better if we did the right thing now rather than a year or two from now or three. But regardless, when the Fed finally does the right thing, the dollar is going to be much, much lower than it is now, and it's probably going to lose even more value after it does the right thing. But unfortunately, if it keeps doing the wrong thing, the dollar is going to lose almost all of its value, and maybe, yes, maybe all of its value. And I don't know how it's going to play out. You know, I can hope for the best, but I'm certainly not going to invest as if the best is going to happen. We need to prepare for the worst. But again, even if it's the best-case scenario, even under the best-case scenario, I still can't see how the dollar doesn't depreciate substantially. I mean substantially, not just another 10 or 20%, but another 30, 40% or more, even under the best of circumstances. In the worst-case scenario, it can go down 90%, 95%, 99%. It's certainly possible. Based on the course that we're on now, that is what will happen, assuming we don't change direction. But regardless, you want to make the same investments. You know, you want to get your money out of the dollar. You want to be invested in foreign assets regardless of what happens. Anyway, thank you for the call. Let me take a quick commercial break, and I'll be back with more conversation and more calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and the number to call, 888-678-9597. You know, quickly, news came out today on credit card debt, a surge in Americans putting things on their credit cards. I'm sure a lot of people are charging $4 a gallon gasoline, which was now a reality in the U.S., and I think we're going to be at $5 a gallon by the end of the summer. And I said that at the beginning of the year. My prediction was $5 a gallon gasoline by the end of the summer in the beginning of the year, even late last year. And it's, you know, people were like, no way, and pretty much we're almost there. But people are putting a lot of things on their credit cards right now. This is a terrible sign. People are struggling. They can't borrow money against their homes anymore. Their line of credit is being severed. So they're being forced to borrow money to make ends meet. And I think a lot of people who are borrowing on credit cards are not going to be able to pay the money back. And I don't even think they care. I think they're just trying to eat, and they're trying to buy gasoline, and they're doing it any way they can. And they're already so upside down on their mortgages. They owe hundreds of thousands of dollars more than their homes are worth. They have lots of debt. They figure, you know, why not go for broke? Why not take on even more debt? I can't pay the debt I have. I'm probably going to go broke, so I might as well just keep on borrowing as long as lenders are dumb enough to lend me more money. And that's what's going to end this thing. You know, you've got big run-ups now in Visa and MasterCard. You know, MasterCard was already out. Visa was a new IPO. I've been telling people not to buy these stocks. Of course, they've been going up recently. And they've been going up because of all the news about how much people are using their credit cards, which, of course, is great for these companies. But ultimately, what's going to happen is when the Americans can't pay their bills and the credit card debt collapses and nobody will lend anybody money anymore, then these card companies are going to collapse because they're not going to have any earnings when the banks will no longer fund the credit card borrowing. And the Fed has already jumped ahead of this, saying it's going to buy a securitized credit card debt, but it's only buying it so long as it's AAA rated. Well, pretty soon none of that credit card debt's going to be AAA rated. It's all going to be junk. And it shouldn't be AAA rated right now. But this is a disaster in the making. Americans are going down and they're grabbing for whatever lifeline they can reach. But this is all an indication of the problems. The fact that Americans are using their credit cards isn't to be confused with a sign of, oh, the economy is good. Look how much money people are spending. People are not spending any more money. They're just borrowing money that they used to, you know, they're just paying for things with credit that they used to be able to pay for with cash because they don't have the money anymore. Or they're borrowing on their credit cards because they used to borrow against their homes, and now they can't do that anymore, so now they have to borrow on their credit cards to buy things. But, you know, this is an ominous sign. You know, also quickly on the gold price, I am surprised that gold is still as cheap as it is. Gold is probably one of the best buys I've seen or in a long time as far as gold. You know, oil is $126 a barrel, and gold is only about $860, $870 an ounce. That is a steal. I'm confident that you're going to see the divergence between gold and oil close, not with oil prices collapsing, but with gold prices meeting oil. I would have a target by the end of the year potentially of $1,200 an ounce for the price of gold, a substantial increase from its current price. You know, also, of course, when I talk about gold, I'm also bullish about silver. So I would be buying the metals, you know, with both hands right now. If you're, you know, been contemplating buying gold, you know, this is the time to do it. You know, if you have gold and you've been looking for a place to add, you know, with oil at $120 a barrel, $126, it's telling you that it's going to go up. You know, unless you think oil prices are going to collapse, then gold prices have got to go up. There's a historical relationship there, and I don't think it's going to change. I think it's going to hold. So it's a great time. You know, we sell a lot of gold and silver to the Perth Mint. The number to call for information on the Perth Mint to talk to Danny or Matt in Newport Beach is 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. And let me go back to the phones. Let me take a call from Ken in Toronto. Go ahead, Ken.
Hi, Peter. Nice talking with you.
Thanks for calling.
I'm Canadian, but I lived in Asia through the 90s, so I remember when the economy slowed over there and Japan went into a deflationary situation, and Indonesia, say, went into a hyperinflationary situation. And I don't know if the difference is the amount of debt they had when the recession came on. And I was also reading some work on, I think his name's Peter, but his last name is Blumen. I think you know him because he's actually recommended your book, even if you don't know him. But he was giving some reports of what the Fed was saying in 1999, and they were saying at that time that they would buy mortgage junk bonds and even buy the whole stock market and the whole housing market if they needed to dump money into the economy.
Well, that was Ben Bernanke wrote that famous speech that gave him the name, led to his name, Helicopter Ben, when the Fed was saying, well, we have a printing press, we can always stop deflation, we can print as much money as we want and buy whatever we want. So that the Fed talked about what they could do to stop deflation. But, you know, deflation, you know, falling prices is not a bad thing. You know, it's, you know, we want prices to fall. We don't want prices to rise.
I was wondering what my actual
means value.
I think you're going into this. I'm preparing for hyperinflation, but I'm wondering how you seem to be sure that deflation won't happen. I just wanted to find out your mindset.
Look, there is going to be a deflation in terms of gold. All right, it is no question that things are going to get cheaper. So if you own gold, you're prepared for deflation because you're prepared to be able to buy assets, whether they're real estate or stocks, cheaper because you'll be able to buy more shares or more houses for each ounce of gold that you own. But in terms of U.S. dollars, that's not going to happen because the Fed can print dollars at no cost, as many as it wants, and it's going to do it. The Fed has really drawn a line in the sand. If the Fed is not going to allow Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to go bankrupt, I mean, look at the horrendous news that they came out with a couple days ago. They're having to slash their dividend. They're having to raise more capital. And what is the government doing with Fannie and Freddie? They're saying, you know what, we're going to lax your capital requirements. We want to encourage you to be even more reckless than you were before. We want you to loan out even more money. You know, it's crazy. It's like you're a parent and your kid comes home with a bad report card, and what you do is you lengthen his curfew. And you say, you know what, instead of coming home at 10 o'clock at night, why don't you stay out till 12? You know, you're not part, you know, doing the exact opposite. They should be saying, you know, you made all these lousy loans. We want you to be stricter. We want you to be more careful about who you loan money to. Instead, they're saying, you know what, be even less careful. Make even more loans. You know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to prop up real estate prices, which is stupid. I was on television today with a congressman, And they're saying they're trying to help homeowners, people buy homes, and they want to give them a tax credit. And he said that'll help people buy homes, and we want to make sure that home prices don't fall. And I said, wait a minute. If you want to help people buy homes, then let the prices fall. I mean, there's nothing like low prices to make homes affordable. I mean, instead of giving people tax credits to buy expensive homes, why not let the home price fall so they don't need the tax credits and they can buy homes with less debt? You know, the same thing is happening in the bursting of the education bubble. I wrote about that in my commentaries. You know, college tuition was a bubble just like real estate. You know, what fueled high college tuitions? Easy money. The fact that any student at any university can pick pretty much borrow money to pay whatever crazy tuition some college wants to demand. But now that the loans are blowing up that they're defaulting on and there's the market is drying up for student loans, students are not going to be able to borrow money. And if the government stays out of it, if the government doesn't now replace the loans that the private sector will no longer fund, if the government stays out of it, what's going to happen? Are Americans just going to stop going to college? No. What's going to happen is colleges are going to slash their overhead. They're going to lay off a bunch of unnecessary administrative people, and they're going to try to deliver to the American public an education at a price that the average American can afford without borrowing $100,000, just like they used to, you know, before all these loans were available.
We have the same situation up here in Canada with medical care. All of a sudden, something that used to be $3 in Asia is $80, even though you have medical insurance, because now they're charging $800 for that same procedure that they're charging $10 in
Look,
Asia.
Whenever the government gets involved, it runs up prices. The government distorts the free market, and you know, and we don't want it. We want the government out, and nowhere is it probably more important than in money. I mean, why do we have a centralized government planning in interest rates? I mean, why do we have a bureaucrat in Washington setting the price of money? Why don't we have the market set the price? We don't want, you know, we don't want bureaucrats setting the price of food or setting the price of clothing or setting the price of television sets. Why should they set the price of money? And the problem is when they set the price of money too low, they create these bubbles and malinvestments, and they really screw things up. And this time, of course, you know, it's the mother of all screw-ups. Because the consequences of what the Fed has done is horrendous, and now what they're trying to do is they're trying to cover their tracks. I mean, they're not allowing, you know, these brokerage firms and these banks to go broke. They're not allowing these government-sponsored entities to go broke, and the cost of saving them is horrendous. And there's no way to save them, in my opinion, without gold going to $5,000 an ounce. I mean, if Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac do not go bankrupt, if many of these major Wall Street firms do not go bankrupt, then gold's going to be at 5,000. I don't see how there's any way the Fed can save them without simultaneously creating enough inflation to send gold to those levels. And it's going to send the dollar way down.
Would the Fed ever actually be able to control long-term interest rates? Is that impossible?
I mean, they influence them. Eventually, they're going to lose all control because nobody's going to want to lend the money. Nobody's going to want to borrow. I mean, no one's going to want to loan at those low interest rates because they know they're not going to get their money back. Now, eventually, the Federal Reserve can control it because they can buy all the government bonds. They can buy them, but then you have hyperinflation. And even though then no one will be able to borrow anything because nobody will want to lend in the dollar. I mean, no one's going to lend you money in a currency that's collapsing in value. People are just going to want to get, you know, and so people are going to want to borrow money one day in this country. They might have to agree to a loan in euros. But then, of course, you run the risk of the government abrogating those contracts and saying they're illegal. But, you know, there are a lot of, you know, you can contemplate all the crazy and terrible things that might happen. And there's a whole list of things. And a lot of them are very scary, what the U.S. government might end up doing. It could be horrific. But the bottom line is, whatever they do, we know that as a result of the fact that Americans have basically borrowed trillions of dollars from the rest of the world and blown it, right? We didn't invest it. We blew it. We didn't build factories. We put media rooms in our McMansions. You know, we bought things. We bought SUVs and plasma TVs and all kinds of things. And so the money is gone, and the losses are going to be huge. Somebody's going to lose this money. If Americans bought trillions of dollars worth of stuff that they couldn't afford, who paid for it? Who bought it for them? Well, it's the guy that's got his money in a CD. It's the guy that's got his money in muni bonds or a guy that has an annuity. And if you have any of these assets, if you're in the dollar, you're going to suffer a tremendous loss of wealth if you don't act quickly to reallocate your assets and get that money into foreign stocks, foreign currencies, precious metals, commodities. You don't want to own stock in U.S. companies. As I said, you know, right now they're talking about windfalls, profit taxes on oil companies. In a couple of years from in a Hillary administration or a Barack Obama administration, they're going to be talking about windfalls, profit taxes on everybody, on exporters, anybody who's making front money. Oh, you know, these multinationals are earning a lot of money now because of the weak dollar. Okay, well, let's tax that money away. It's a windfall. Why should they make all this money just because the dollar is down? Let's tax it and use the money for the poor people who are struggling to pay $10 a gallon for gasoline or whatever the price is going to be in a few years. So you got to get out of harm's way. You got to get out of the crosshairs of these politicians who are going to be looking for scapegoats. They're going to be vilifying anybody who's making money while other people are suffering. And you know, you don't want to believe these statistics. You know, the statistics keep saying that we're not even in a recession, that it's just a slowdown. You know, I was speaking with a woman just the other day that I just was talking to, and she had been in the she owns a small retail shop, a gift shop in a mall here in New Jersey. She'd been in business for 20 years, and I said, "How business?" And she said, "It's the worst it's ever been. She's never had has been in much trouble as she has in this last year." She said, "This last Christmas was the worst Christmas she had in 20 years." She said that, you know, the only thing going for her is her lease is almost up in the mall, and she said that both stores on either side of her have already gone bankrupt, so they're empty. And she talked to me about the restaurant right across from her in the mall, and she talks to the waiters there and how they're really hurting because their income is way down. People are eating, you know, less in the restaurants. They're ordering less expensive meals, and then they're tipping less. And things that, you know, people have never even complained about. I mean, I think the downturn is just getting underway, and it's a lot worse than these government statistics let on. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the government statistics never get bad. And I think that that's part of Washington's view, is that they think it's all expectations. They think if they just say things are good, that things will be good. And if they tell people that things are bad, then it's going to be a self-defeating, self-perpetuating prophecy. So I think the government, and maybe that's, you know, they think this is policy, I think their policy is to deliberately paint a very, very rosy scenario in hopes that they will the economy around, and they don't want to incite a panic, and they don't want to make it worse by leveling with us about just how bad it is. But believe me, I think it's already pretty bad. But you know what? It's just getting started. It's going to get a lot worse. Anyway, thanks for the call, Ken.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, let me go to Mike, who's on hold from Asheville, North Carolina. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Peter, thanks for taking my call. I noticed this week I got an email that Treasury is limiting the purchase of savings bonds from a 30,000 yearly limit to 5,000. And I'm just...
Excuse me, I couldn't hear what you just said.
Yeah, the Treasury Department is limiting the purchase of savings bonds from 30,000 a year to 5,000 a year. And I'm just wondering, what would be their motivation of dropping that limit down? Are they trying to steer people towards tips? And if so,
no idea. I have no idea why they would do that. I mean, I would advise people to buy zero in those bonds. So my limit would be none of them. But
right, I don't personally purchase.
Obviously,
I was just wondering. I would think they would want to encourage the sale of their bonds and not limit them per person.
Are you still there?
Yeah. Yes, I'm here.
I don't know why they're doing it.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Hey, I've got another Peter calling from Connecticut. Are you there, Peter?
I'm right here. Good evening, Mr. Schiff. I've listened to you, read your book, and agree with 99% of what you say, but there is one thing I have a question about, and it's your often made statement that we'll be re-exporting cars, and that's what foreigners will buy with all of these trillions that we've sent over there. And at least in my thought would be, why wouldn't a foreign central banker with $1 trillion to spend want to buy U.S. stocks in multinational companies that might even do business in his country?
Well, they will. They will. I mean, they will buy our stocks. You know, they'll buy our assets unless the U.S. government says they can't, unless they pass laws or prevent them through regulation. But, yes, they're going to buy by our companies. I mean, there's a chance that the majority of the Dow Jones 30 will be owned lock, stock, and barrel by foreign interests. Many of these companies might no longer trade on U.S. exchanges. They get bought up. But that doesn't mean they're not also going to buy our used consumer goods, because that's what Americans are going to have to sell. I mean, Americans, if you look at what do Americans have, if food gets very expensive, if energy gets very expensive, if the basic necessities get very expensive, and an American is living in a house with, he's got three television sets and he's got, you know, all sorts of nice fancy things that he has, but he really can't afford to eat or feed his family. And then you got a household in China that doesn't have any television sets, but plenty of money and food. You know, what's going to happen is the American is going to basically offer the Chinese citizen his TV set, and you know, it's like a giant repossession. I mean, we don't have factories to produce consumer goods, but we have a lot of consumer goods that consumers already own. Now, they're not going to get prime money for them. I mean, I don't know what the stuff's going to be worth, 10, 20 cents on the dollar. But it happens on a small scale when people run into trouble. They go to a pawn shop and they hawk their stuff. And that's basically what Americans are going to be doing. They're going to be pawning off a lot of their consumer goods. But the people who are going to buy those consumer goods are going to be in China or other countries. You know, I was watching this guy on Fox Business who had just started an airline in Brazil, Azul, guy that did JetBlue. But, you know, he says, you know, the airfares are twice as high in Brazil as they are here. It's a lot there, here. It's a lot easier to make money. But he said one thing he mentioned, he said that they just introduced credit cards down there, and they're brand new, and Brazilians are getting credit cards for the first time. And what I'm thinking of is, hey, these guys have credit cards with zero balances. Aren't they? They're much better consumers now than Americans who are maxed out on their credit cards. So you're going to have a lot of purchasing power around the world, and you're going to have Americans who can't afford to make ends meet, but who have cars that they can't afford to drive and things like that, and they're going to sell them. And, you know, they're going to be exported because that's where the purchasing power is going to be.
Great. I had one other thought. I just never heard it mentioned anywhere, and it's a little theory I have called the musical chairs theory, which is that as the American dollar starts to slide down, foreign bankers will want to dump dollars quickly, which could lead to a potential crash. You know, look, the value of the currency.
Nobody wants to be the last one in. No one wants to have dollars when the music stops, because then they're worthless. But it's always a question of how do you sell without causing a run yourself. But eventually this thing is going to fall apart. There are too many people around the world that want out of the dollar. And, you know, one of these days, and that's why I say to clients, I mean, one of these days we're going to wake up and the dollar is going to be 20 or 30% less valuable than when we went to sleep. It's going to happen. I don't know when. Is it going to be next week, next month, next year, in a few years? But one of these days it's going to happen. The dollar is just going to fall through the floor. The whole thing is a house of cards. It's a facade. Our whole economy is phony. Our whole economy is just as real as the dot-com stocks were, or just as real as subprime mortgages were. We're built on a foundation of false wealth and prosperity. It's all a myth. It's all consumption. It's debt finance consumption. Anybody can have a vibrant economy. You go to the poorest country in Africa and say, hey, all your citizens can borrow tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars and spend it, they're going to have a vibrant economy. But, I mean, they can't pay the money back. It's all a farce. So the quicker you can get your money out of this country and out of the dollar, the sounder you can sleep at night. Because if you're going to bed at night and you've got wealth in dollars, you risk waking up broke. And one of these days it's going to happen. And it's going to be too late. If you miss this boat, if people allow their wealth to evaporate, they're never going to be able to get it back. It can't come back. You know, like if you're still sitting on bankrupt.com stocks, if you still got shares of pets.com or drcoop.com, and you're hoping that somehow the shares come back, it's not going to happen. And the same thing is going to happen with the dollar. Once it crashes, it ain't going to come back.
I agree. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let me take a quick break, one more commercial, and we'll be back for the remaining calls in the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and this is Peter Schiff taking calls at Euro-Pacific Capital, Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market update. And I've got Ken on hold from Gary, North Carolina. Ken, you there?
Sure. Hi. Privileged to speak to you. I am a client, but I've not previously had the honor of speaking to you directly. You actually anticipated my question with an earlier caller about the prospects for gold and silver rebounding sometime soon. The junior miners, as you know, have gotten kicked pretty badly the last couple months, so I'm inferring that you expect those to rebound soon as well.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that think that the dollar is going to have a rebound, that the Fed is done cutting interest rates, a strong dollar is going to be bearish for gold, and that's dropped, and it's hurting the sector. And, you know, there's a lot of people betting on a rally in the dollar, but you know what? These bets are going to lose. There's no way the dollar is going to rally. I mean, it can rally a little bit, but we're not going to have a new bull market because the Fed is no longer cutting rates, because the rates are at 2%. I mean, they're already so low that the rates are way below the rate of inflation. And when the rates are below the rate of inflation, nobody's going to want to hold dollars. The dollar's going to go down. Plus, the Fed is still printing dollars in reckless abandon. They are, going to be buying up more and more collateral. Their balance sheet is going to swell with worthless mortgage backs and credit card and all loans and student loans. And they have already committed us to a path of hyperinflation at the moment and a dramatically weaker dollar. People are going to figure this out maybe before the end of the year. I think we're going to see if there's going to be a super spike. I think it's going to be a super spike in gold. And then these stocks are going to take off. One of these days, I mean, they're not even going to be able to open up these gold stocks because the bids are going to be so overwhelming that they're probably going to have to close the exchanges. Because people are going to realize that these stocks are much too cheap, because gold might go up $100, $200 in a single session, maybe more. You know, eventually there's not going to be anybody wanting to sell gold. And there's a lot of people who are short. They're going to be looking to cover, and there's not going to be any people willing to sell them the gold they need to buy to cover their positions. So I just, you just want to get yourself positioned. You want to own your gold now, because one of these days people are going to be frantically trying to buy it at much, much higher prices.
I am a client, so I'm already neck deep in gold and in the miners, especially the North American miners.
Mm-hmm.
If I could, one quick question as well, slightly different topic. The Canadian Energy Trust, I understand they're going to lose their special tax status, I believe.
Yeah, they had a five-year grant window, and I think there might be about 3 years or so left in those 5 years. So eventually, unless the government comes in and changes it, and it's still a chance that they will, yes, that at some point they're going to start to pay higher taxes, and that will make the yields lower.
But when that happens, do you anticipate there might be some sell-off and that would...
Well, I think we've already had the sell-off in anticipation of that. So I don't know that there'll be any extra sell-off, because I think the people who are buying the stocks, I think those, that's already factored into the current price. And, many of these stocks now, which were in the doldrums, have been making 52-week highs recently, with the price of oil and natural gas moving up to where they are. And so I think the prices of these stocks could be a lot higher by the time those higher taxes ultimately kick in. What would be the interesting thing would be, what if they don't kick in? I mean, maybe there's not a 100-degree possibility, so, I guess there could be a slight decline. Maybe only 90% of the decline is priced in, because there's a remote chance that the higher taxes never materialize.
Okay. Well, then it sounds like we should stay there. Thank you.
Yeah, we're still buying them, and I think they're good.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. I have a call from Ho in California. Is that the right pronunciation?
That is it. It's Ho. How you doing, Peter?
Good. How are you?
Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to the show, and I'm always here, and I love listening to it. It's one of the high points of my week. But I'm finding that I'm totally distracted by the oddest thing. You mentioned that Fox was going to drop some of the panel shows that they've been running. And I go to your site and I watch those things. I don't have cable, so I watch them there. And I love them. I just sit here and roar at some of the things these people say. Now, I know enough about television to figure that it's not being taken away because people aren't watching and they don't have ratings. And I thought, I wonder if they told Peter why they're taking it off the air.
No, I mean, I don't think there's any. They're obviously trying to get ratings. They're trying to find things that are going to be appealing. And so they want to change and not have the big panels and comment. They're just going to have smaller interviews. Or I mean, they're a new young network and they're trying to find things that work. I don't know. I mean, I've been trying to get to the programming guys and trying to have an idea for a show for me. And I have a feeling that my show could be one of the most popular, if not the most popular show on Fox Business. And I think I can help. I bring a lot of people to their network if I had my own show, and I think there's a lot I could do with it.
That would but I'm going back to the panels for a minute because I think the panels are a blast, and I've been on message boards where they talk about them too. So I started wondering, maybe it's not because they're not getting an audience and they don't have numbers. Maybe it's because there's people on there who are saying things that the people running these companies and in, their ads.
I don't think so, because all the people who are on the panels are still going to be going on Fox. It's just not going to be a preset regular panel. I mean, the same people are going to still be doing the shows and saying the same stuff. It's just they're just going to say it in a different format. So I don't think there's any. I think they're legitimately just trying to figure out the best way to get ratings. I don't think there's any kind of attempt to change the message. And of course, when I'm not on the panels, I mean, most of the stuff is, most of the stuff is pretty one-sided, but,
Well, Peter, you do.
I'm not the only bad. I mean, I find on some of these Fox panels that a lot of times people say, well, I agree with Peter. So it's not like, they disagree with everything I say.
No, and I love it when they do that, and I love it when the hosts even turn around and after they've bashed you for a minute or two, they go, but he's been right. That's wonderful. All right, thank you so much, Peter.
Thanks for the call. Hey, we've got about 10 minutes left, so let's not take any more new callers. I think I have one call left on hold, so let's make this the final call. Kevin is on the line from San Diego. How you doing, Kevin?
Hi, Peter. I was wondering if you might be able to put a fine point on the idea of getting out of the dollar into the foreign-denominated currencies. I was wondering, what's the practical difference of buying, for instance, Euro-Pacific Capital? I won't mention any specific names, I know you don't want to get into that on the program, but certain common stocks that are foreign equities, you guys buy in the denominated currencies when they're also listed as ADRs in New York. And I was wondering, what is the real strategic advantage?
Well, there's very few that we buy that have ADRs, and there might be a couple of them. Now, a few of the stocks that we buy have over-the-counter traded ADRs, so the spreads are kind of wide and there's very little volume. But the vast majority of the stocks that we buy don't have ADRs at all. But some do. Some do. And generally, though, when there is an ADR available, like a lot of the Canadian Energy Trusts, those that have ADRs, we tend to buy the ADRs. We find that they're even more liquid in the U.S. in many cases than they are in Canada. But most of the time, in the rare occasion where the stock does have an ADR, we find that there's a lot more volume and a lot more liquidity in buying the ordinary foreign shares. But the thing is, most of the stocks that we buy just don't have ADRs, and they never will, because in order to have an ADR, you've got to comply with the listing requirements of the New York Stock Exchange. You've got to comply with, Sarbanes-Oxley and all these crazy things. And, there's really no reason for companies to go through the added expense of listing their shares in the United States when they have plenty of volume and plenty of liquidity in their own markets. And I think that the U.S. is going to be an increasingly less attractive place for companies to be listed. I mean, basically, Americans are broke, so we don't have any money to buy stocks anyway. So I think more and more companies are going to be interested in listing their stocks, not in the U.S. market, but in other markets. So let's say a small company in New Zealand wants to have a listing in another country. It might rather list itself on the Hang Seng than list itself in the U.S. Because it might find that there's more investors there and there'd be even more interest and more liquidity. So I think, more and more it's going to be important that you invest internationally, because most of the best investment opportunities are probably not going to come to the U.S. markets.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for calling. Anyway, so we got about another 5-6 minutes left. As I said, remember, there's 193 reviews on Crash Proof up on Amazon. So if we get seven more reviews, hopefully all five-star reviews, if you haven't reviewed it, you just go to Amazon and you write something about the book, then we'll have 200 reviews on there. Also notice that Ron Paul's book recently came out. I'm about halfway. It's a small book. I was reading it on a plane. It's a good book, the one that he wrote about the Revolution of Manifesto. I know his book is now number one on Amazon, and I think it debuted on the New York Times bestseller list as well. So it's good to see a lot of people buying a book like that, and I think it's very important that more and more people get educated about, you know, the real role of government, to understand the Constitution and freedom, and to know why we're in the mess that we're in, and to know that it didn't have to be this way. You know, we didn't have to wreck our country, and, you know, it's not going to have to stay like this. There are solutions. There are alternatives to more government and more inflation. And if more and more people can read books like that, and we can have more young people and people getting involved and understanding that there are alternatives, then maybe there's hope for this country at some time. But between now and then, there's going to be a lot of pain, for a lot of our friends and our neighbors, and there's just no way around it. It's unfortunate that we've done this to ourselves. But, you know, the only thing that you can do, the only thing that we can do apart from trying to help educate other people, because, you know, we want to have an enlightened electorate, and we want to somehow be able to resist the calls for greater government and more encroachments on our liberties, which is naturally going to happen when you have, you know, economic catastrophe and crisis, which is exactly where we're headed. And, you know, this is not alarmist. This is not, you know, just fear-mongering. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, my predictions have been pretty good, you know, over the years regarding what would happen and so when I'm saying that it's going to get very bad and it is going to be a major economic downturn and there's going to be a lot of potentials for social unrest and a lot of scapegoating and a lot of politicians looking to vilify one group or another, particularly groups that seem to be profiting while other people are suffering. People need to take those warnings to heart. You know, I don't think that my forecasts are going to stop being right. I think I've had this thing pegged from the beginning, and it's a whole big process. It's a big picture. It's a big thing. What's happened so far is just part of the puzzle, but it's the entire puzzle that I think I've gotten correct. I think I know where all the pieces fit in and what the puzzle is going to look like when it's finally put together. And so what we need to do is we need to, you know, act as quickly as we can to get our portfolios in order. And, you know, don't worry about the short-term performance, what happens month to month, week to week. You know, the dollar might pop up a little. It doesn't really matter, because we know what the final analysis is going to be. You know, it amazes me. You know, we're on television today, and, you know, people are saying, well, look, you know, oil's up today, and the dollar is up, too. So obviously there's no correlation. Like, you know, just what like every single day, the dollar has to be down for oil to be up. I mean, it's the big picture. You have to look at what's happening overall, the long-term trends, and what's driving these trends. You can't just look at what happens day-to-day, because what happens day-to-day actually means nothing unless you're a day trader. And we're certainly not encouraging our clients to do that. We're buying these stocks, we're collecting our dividends in foreign currencies, and we're preserving our wealth. And we're basically battening down the hatchets and preparing for what's going to be a tremendous loss of wealth in U.S. dollar-denominated assets. And in the meantime, we're collecting the income that we need to supplement the rising cost of living. And we're locking up these income streams in the currencies that are likely going to hold up the best in this environment. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. I apologize for that noise. I'm doing this show from my office, and I think the housekeeping staff has come in and they're now vacuuming up. And so I don't know if you guys can hear the vacuum noise in the background. Anyway, thanks again for listening. Next week on Wednesday, I will be in the Money Show in Las Vegas. So I don't know. Hopefully I'll be able to do the show, but I'll be there with John Catalfio. He's the one that normally substitutes for me. So anyway, I'll see everybody in Vegas who's coming to the Money Show on Wednesday, and then I will be back doing the show from my normal location 2 weeks from tonight. Anyway, thanks for listening. Again, don't forget to call 800-727-7922 and buy a few more copies of my book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. Thanks for listening, and I will be here again, hopefully next Wednesday, but definitely in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.